Shavua Tov. Hope you had a beautiful Shabbat. And today is a very special day. Every day is a special day, but today is also a very special day. It's the Yahrzeit, it's the Hilula of the Alter Rebbe, the Baal HaTanya. And every time that a tzaddik passes from the world, means he completed his work. Therefore, it's a very powerful day. So, since we can't fly to Mejibus and to the grave, it's good to take on ourselves good decisions, take on ourselves a good start. We're going to learn about it in the third class, but the Baal HaTanya was a very, very, very special tzaddik. So, without further ado, our first class, as usual, is going to be about the parasha. Later on, we started learning the course about tikkun amidot, refinement of character. We started last week, so this is going to be the next class. And the third class, we're going to learn a discourse by the Baal HaTanya. And as our habit on Sunday, we start first with a class about parashat HaShavua, something that we can apply for our Avodat Hashem. And last week, we started a new book, the Book of Shemot. We started a new era. Up until now, we went through kind of the history of the beginning of our nation. And now, last week, we started the Book of Shemot, where we see that we go down to exile. And now, we have a whole new thing going on in the next couple of weeks about the exile of Mitzrayim, that this was the first exile. And up until today, every day, we keep mentioning the whole exile of Mitzrayim and the Yetziat Mitzrayim, the going out of exile. But of course, every question, every parasha arouses different questions. And this parasha arouses a very big question. Before we go to the question, about 60 years ago, on a very bright day, something happened that kind of changed the history of Israel. And that was the day that the Israeli government announced that they caught Eichmann. Eichmann was one of the highest ranking SS officers in the Nazi regime. And it took a while, but he was the first one that the Israelis were actually able to catch him. And of course, it was a big scream in the world. Wow, ooh, now we're going to see what the Jews are going to do after they were slaughtered and tortured and burnt and then murdered in the death camps. They got their own country. It took them a short while. And now they caught one of the first ones. Now the whole world was waiting to see what the Israelis are going to do, how they're going to revenge, so to say. So it was a very big thing, Bechlal, you know, for many they wanted just to push this whole story under the rug. And here it comes back again by catching one of the top ones. Now why it was special, so to say, in a negative way, because Eichmann took a very good lawyer. And for whatever reason, democratic country, they gave him a lawyer instead of shooting him in his head right away. But they gave him a lawyer. So he took a very, very good lawyer. And he had a very strong teana, a strong fight. And you know what he said? I was just following orders. What do you want from me? So of course, the defense, they showed all sorts of letters and all sorts of recordings where there was one situation where Hitler, Yimach Shemo, actually wanted to release a group of Jews in return to money or to access somewhere. I don't remember exactly the story. And they found a letter of Eichmann, Yimach Shemo, kind of rebuking Hitler by how dare you release these group of Jews. Anyways, the point was that his argument was that I was just fulfilling orders. The reality was that he wasn't really fulfilling orders. He did what he wants. He had an agenda of himself, and he did everything from his hate. But the defense was fighting the fight that he was nothing. He was just a screw in the system. So the same exact thing, we can kind of fight for Paro in this parasha. Because a lot of people might say, wait a minute, why are you blaming Paro for this entire exile and for all the massacre that he did? Paro can say, I was fulfilling orders. I didn't do anything wrong. And why would he say something like that? Because 200 years before that, it was already told to Avraham Avinu that your children are going to go to Mitzrayim. They're going to be slaves. They're going to be tortured. That was already predicted hundreds of years before. So Paro could say, well, what do you want from me? I'm just fulfilling orders. I'm not a mean person. Kadosh Baruch Hu said that you're going to go to Egypt and you're going to be slaves. I'm just doing my job. Somebody has to slave you. Somebody has to torture you. So with this question, it arouses even a bigger question. It means that Paro didn't have free choice, because he, so to say, was decreed by the Kadosh Baruch Hu that that's what he has to do. Now, if Paro didn't have free choice, it means that we also don't have free choice. So this arouses a bigger question about the whole concept of free choice, of Bchira Chofshit. Because we know that we have Bchira Chofshit. So if we have free choice, then it means kind of, Hashem doesn't know what I'm going to do, but if I don't have free choice, because it says that everything is predicted and Hashem knows everything, so I don't have free choice, meaning, though, how can I be punished for anything? How can you hold me accountable for anything that I do if I don't have free choice? So it's like a catch-22. If I don't have free choice, how can you punish me? How can you tell me the entire Torah is full of punishments? And if you don't do this, you're going to get punished for that. But if I do have free choice, then what are you? Then Hashem knows everything. So it's kind of like a circle that there's no answer. And that's a very big question in Judaism about the concept of free choice. That if I don't have it, then don't punish me. And if I do have it, then how can you tell me that everything is predicted? Exactly. So, the answer is kind of in our parasha, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Even though the whole concept of free choice is explained in depth in many different types of teachings, whether it's the teachings of Kabbalah or teachings of Hasidut, but there is a very deep answer to it. But today we're going to talk about one of the answers. How could it be that if there's free choice, that Paro was punished? We see even in the parasha it says very clearly that I will harden his heart. So if you harden his heart, why are you punishing him? And if somebody wants to argue Paro wasn't punished, he was punished, because his country was destroyed, his kingship was taken, and he was drowned in the ocean. So he was punished. So on that, the Ramban comes and asks two big questions. First of all, Paro did the will of Hashem. So why are you punishing him? That's one big question that the Ramban asks. The second one is, let's say, hypothetically, Paro would do tshuva and says, listen, I don't want to do this anymore. Leave me alone. Would he have the option of releasing the Jews? Let's say he would do tshuva. Because hypothetically, he could say, listen, Hashem, leave me alone. I don't want to be part of this. You know, there's a very famous story at the time of the destruction of the Second Temple. Then there was a certain Caesar that came and he got orders to destroy Yerushalayim. And when he came to destroy Yerushalayim, his name was Neron, he was like, I don't want to destroy Yerushalayim. I need to come now into a problem with the master of the universe, the king of the Jews and the king of the world. I need to now get into an issue with him. So he was trying to find out if it's really the will of the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And there's a whole story, I don't want to get into it, but you know the first part of the story, that he caught a boy coming from Cheder and he told him, tell me a pasuk what you learned today in school. And then the pasuk, it says that Yerushalayim has to be destroyed. Then he took an arrow and he started shooting arrows to different directions, and all the arrows turned around and went into the direction of Yerushalayim. And the story is much, much longer, but he got the point that it's the will of Hashem to destroy Beit HaMikdash, and he's like, I don't want to have a part in it. And he turned around, he disappeared, Later on, we know that he made tshuva, he converted, and he became one of the sages. And because of him, he ran away from the army. So instead of that, came even a worse guy, and came to destroy Yerushalayim. But the story was that he was like, I don't want to be now to come to be the destroyer now. Now I'm going to have an issue with Hashem. So he ran away. So the same thing with Paro. Paro could have said, listen, I don't need this headache. Leave me alone. And if hypothetically he would do that, would he be able to release the Jews? Of course the answer is no, because it was the will of the Kadosh Baruch Hu that we're going to be in exile. We're supposed to be in exile 430 years. That was the prediction. It was Sweden, and we end up being in exile for 210 years. But it was predicted already to Avraham Avinu at the time of Brit Ben Abtarim that Zaracha, your generations, your offsprings, will go to exile and they're going to be tortured. So of course comes this big question. How could it be that Paro would get punished? So from that, first of all, I want to understand, forget about Paro, he less cares me. I want to understand that if I don't have free choice, now why do you punish me? So to say. Because we know there's a concept that is called Sachar Ve'onesh. I do something good, I get a reward. I do something bad, I get punished. So if everything is predicted, then how can you punish me? And if it's not predicted and I have free choice, then what do you want from me? So, of course, like you said, it arouses a very big question. The thing is that the Kadosh Baruch Hu constantly puts us in situations that I do have free choice, but I don't have much of a choice. Now, sometimes I do have situations that I do have a lot of free choice, and I can choose right now if I'll have this cup of tea, or if I'll have this cake, or if I'm not going to do a certain thing that the Torah commands me to do, or if I will do it. Here, the free choice is pretty obvious, and I do have a very wide range of choices, so to say. But some situations, I don't have a choice. I'm really stuck to a corner. And the decision that I have to make is against the Torah. So I'm, so to say, forced to do something against the Torah. And there's many different situations. I'm not going to start getting into different examples. But each and every one of us can find that there are many times in my life that I go into a situation. One of the obvious ones is when somebody drags me into a fight. I didn't do anything. What do you want from me? Why are you getting into an argument with me? And that person is upset at me, and I'm like, okay, now I have to apologize, but I don't have to apologize, they didn't even do anything, and that person is upset at me, and he's talking Lashon Hara about me, and I don't want a Jew to be angry with me, so I have to go and somehow appease him, and I'm kind of like forced into this argument. I didn't do anything. What does this person want from me? And many others. There are many situations that in general I have a free choice, but I'm forced to do a bad choice. So that's not fair. And there are many choices like that. I had, like not too long ago, I heard a question. One of my students, Koyman, told me, listen, my business, I work with all the people that I work with are not Jewish. So, you know, when we go out, everybody, it's a big group of people, they want to go out to a restaurant. I have to go with them. It's the business. I don't eat anything, but I'm sitting in the restaurant. And I have to start like saying, listen, I eat kosher, I can't take this, I can't take that, and I bring my own juice or whatever it is. And then it says, and all that they talk about, there's a convention, all they talk about is nonsense. I'm kind of like forced to talk about what's called sicha betela. I mean, when we're talking business, it's business, but after that, everybody's hanging out. I have to like, so to say, schmooze. So he's like, listen, I don't have an option. So this is one example out of many. I don't want to start repeating, giving examples, but the point is that each and every one of us finds ourselves in situations that I'm kind of forced to do something against what Hashem wants me to do. And I really don't want to do it. Sometimes I'm forced to say a lie. I have to. And many other situations. You know, not too long ago also, we were traveling and we were in a situation. I had to not say the truth. You know, sometimes when you travel, especially to certain countries, you can't say, if you say something, you're in trouble. So, and you don't want to lie, but you're like stuck in a situation. And the point is that Hashem puts me in situations sometimes, and then I'm forced, so to say, to have a bad decision. So, the answer to that, first of all, is that even in these situations, I can still do what Hashem wants me to do. And even if I is forced, so to say, to do something like that, there is still one point. I mean, I would say 90% I can say, listen, it's not my decision, but there is still a point that one can say, oh, you still could have done it differently. So, first of all, to understand what's going on in the parasha starts after 86 years of torture, of a Holocaust that's going on in Mitzrayim. Amazingly, exactly 86 years was the age of Miriam, but that's when the parasha starts. Moshe Rabbeinu gets his revelation. Last week we saw that he got his revelation. He comes to Mitzrayim, he gathers the old people, Aaron his brother, and then they go to Paro. And they come to Paro. Imagine the scene, this 80-year-old guy, another guy coming with him, 83-year-old guy, one of them stutters, the other one barely talks. They're walking into the palace, and they're telling him, let the Jews go. Paro's like, that's kind of a joke, is that? Go away from here. And, of course, they start the argument, they start the negotiation, so to say, and Paro thinks it's a joke. And he says, go back to your job. Well, what are you coming to bother me? And Paro even didn't take them serious. And, of course, after that, starts a little bit of a show with all the special effects, with turning the water into blood, and turning the staff into a snake, and then starts the first plagues. Now, a lot of people ask, how long was these plagues? Because the Torah doesn't go and explain to us how long these plagues took place. A day, 3 days, a week, how long did it take? So our sages teach us that the plagues took exactly a year. From the day that Moshe Rabbeinu came till the day that they left, it took exactly a year of negotiation. Now, one opinion that explains this comes from the Talmud. How do they know a year? Because if you remember last week, then Moshe Rabbeinu came and he negotiated, so to say, with Paro, and then Paro got upset and he said, not only that I'm not going to let you go, I'm going to make your job now 100 times harder. You go and get your own straw. Right? In the beginning, the Egyptians would give them the straw, and they had to make the bricks and build whatever cities they had to build. Now Paro says, no, now I'm going to make it harder. You get your own straw. So our sages learn, when do they get the straw? When is it time for the harvest to cut the straw? In the month of Iyar. Right? Meaning that after that, in the Torah it says that a year later they went out, which means that they started this period of the plagues in Iyar, and they left in Nisan, meaning that they took a whole year. But we know that how it worked, that there were 10 plagues. Each plague took up exactly a week, which means the plague of the frogs, the plague of the blood, whatever it was, took a week, and then 3 weeks of negotiating between Moshe and Paro. So 10 plagues, that's 10 months. And the Midrash explains that after the disaster of last week, that Paro made it worse, Moshe got very, very upset, and he says, because of me, not only that I didn't take them out of Egypt, I actually made it worse on them. So Moshe Rabbeinu got very upset and he ran away and he left for 2 months. And for 2 months, Hashem was negotiating with Moshe, come and take them out and don't worry and everything will be okay. So it was exactly a year, the period from the first time Moshe Rabbeinu came to Paro till they left Mitzrayim. So a whole year, the Egyptians were going through torture. The punishment was not only for Paro. The entire nations of Egypt got punished. First, they had 1 week, no water, just blood. Then another week, frogs. Then another week, a mixture of dangerous animals. Then the locusts. Then every plague. The entire nation got punished. So why are you punishing the Egyptians? What did they do? What do you want from them? Punish Paro, or do whatever you want. But why are you punishing an entire nation now? That arouses another question. What did the Egyptians do? Now, we learned that the whole entire punishment was an entire year. We see from that also history kind of repeats itself, because also the punishment of the generation of the flood was a whole year. It didn't right away came the flood. It took a whole year that the ark was already built, besides the 120 years that it took him to build it, and everybody came and looked and said, what are you doing? And he, Noah, kept saying there's going to be a flood. But right before the flood was a whole year that Noah was already screaming, here's the flood. It was already raining, constantly raining. So we know that a mishpat, a trial of a rasha, is 12 months. Like now, we know that if somebody passes away, then a trial in Shamayim of the neshama is 12 months. And it's called mishpat rashaim, a trial of a wicked person is 12 months. That's why we say Kaddish for only 11 months. Because a 12 months is for a rasha, and 11 months is for a tzaddik. So we say 11 months. So we see that Hashem judged Mitzrayim for the entire year. Now, of course, it brings another question, like I said, that why would the Egyptians get punished? Paro is one thing. Why the Egyptians? Now, more than that, we know that Hashem didn't even give Paro the option of doing tshuva, because it kept repeating in the parasha, and I'll harden his heart, and I'll harden his heart. So the second question of the Rambam, that already goes out the window, because he wouldn't, even if he want to do tshuva, Hashem took away his option of doing tshuva. Which, that's already another question. Maybe sometimes Hashem is kind of taking away my option of doing tshuva. When I repeat something over and over and over, maybe Hashem already took my option of doing tshuva. That's already even a bigger question. So answers to that, in the Talmud, in Masechet Nida, there's a part in page 16 that it explains that when a person, before he's born, when the parents are conceiving the child, there's a certain angel that is in charge, that it comes and it takes the drop that is about to make the woman pregnant. He takes this drop in front of the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and he says to the Kadosh Baruch Hu, this drop, what's going to be with her? What's going to be with this drop? What's going to happen to that person? Who is he going to be? And the angel asks three questions. And these questions are the acronym of the word Gevel. Gvura, Bina, Rash. And this angel asks the Kadosh Baruch Hu, Tipa zo, mai tiyeh aleha? What's going to be with this Tipa? First he asks about Gevel, Gibor, Gvura. Is that person going to be tall? It's going to be short? It's going to be handsome? It's going to be beautiful? Going to be ugly? Going to be brave? Going to be a weak, pachdan, a person who's afraid? That's the first question. Then the second is bina. How's going to this person going to be smart? It's going to be not smart? It's going to be wise? And the third question is rash. Is the person going to have money? It's going to be rich, it's going to be poor. What's going to be the financial status of this drop? So of course comes a big wonder and a big question. What? That's what the Jewish religion is about? If he's going to be handsome or not? If he's going to be rich or not? If he's going to be smart? That's what you care about? And the last one, of course, he's going to be rich. That's what you care about? Why don't you ask if he's going to be a tzaddik or not? That's a right question. That's what you would expect to be the question. So comes Rabbi Chanina and he says, no. Hakol bidei shamayim, chutz mi'irat shamayim. Everything is in the hands of the heavens, besides the level of what's called the God-fearing, yirat shamayim. Meaning that if he's going to be handsome or not, or pretty or not, that's in the hands of the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Whether he's going to be smart or dumb, that's in the hands of the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to decide. Whether he's going to have money or not, it's all bidei shamayim, in the hands of the heavens. But if he's going to be a tzaddik or not, that's in his hands. Yirat shamayim, that's our decision. Which means it's already decided for us. If I'm going to be rich, if I'm going to be poor, how tall I'm going to be, how I'm going to look, I'm going to have blue eyes, brown eyes, if I'm going to be smart. All this is decided for me. The only thing that is not decided for me is my yirat shamayim, is how much I'm going to fear the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Meaning my avodat Hashem. That's, Hashem says, that's for you. You're going to decide that. So, if this is the case, it means that all day long and all my life, I will be presented with tests, so to say. Because I'm going to be tested about my yirat shamayim. If I'm going to do the sin, I'm not going to do the sin. If I'm going to do the mitzvah, I'm not going to do the mitzvah. And here we learn something very important. That if the Kadosh Baruch Hu already puts me in a situation, it means that I have the ability to pass it. Kadosh Baruch Hu does not put me in a situation, what's called a nisayon, a test, if he doesn't give me the tools and the ability to overpower it and overcome it and to have the right decision. Means that if I fail or my decision is wrong, it means I didn't use the ability that I was given, or I didn't use the tools that I had access to, which means that it was my decision. So if I decided not to do the mitzvah or not to do the aveira, it's all in my hands. I just have to decide how I do it and what are the tools that are in my hands to decide how I'm going to do it and if I'm going to do it. Which means that every test that I'm be putting in, that I'm tested to, it means there is the option of doing it the right way. And we learn a beautiful story in the Gemara. There was a very special Tana. His name was Rabbi Yochanan. He was the Rebbe of the generation. In the exact same generation was a certain individual that he went kind of off the derech, and he became like the head of all the robbers. His name was Rish Lakish, a very famous Tana in the Gemara. And he went off the derech, and he became like a robber and a thief. And not only that, he became, in our terminology to understand, he became the head of the mafia. Okay, there was a mafia in the time, and he was the head of the mafia. He was controlling all the criminal activities in the land. So the story says that one time Rabbi Yochanan goes to the river, and he dips into the river, whether he went to the mikveh, whether he went to shower, or whatever it was, and comes Rish Lakish, and he starts a conversation with him. And Rabbi Yochanan was known to be a very, very handsome man. And he tells him, Yofcha l'nashim, you're wasting your time on this Bet Midrash, on the yeshiva. You're a very handsome guy. You should go out and hang out with the women. So Rabbi Yochanan was not a stupid man. And he tells him, your power for the Torah. Kocha l'oraitcha. You have a very strong power. You should, instead of utilizing it to scare people and to rob people and to be the head of the mob, you should use this to the Torah. And the story was that he ended up doing tshuva. Rabbi Yochanan told him, Chelcha leoraita, use your power for the Torah. And Yochanan told him, listen, I'm going to do a deal with you. If you come with me to my yeshiva and you learn with me, I promise you, I'm going to marry off my sister to you. And if you think I'm handsome, just imagine how pretty my sister is. And I promise you that if you sit and study with me Torah, I'm going to give you my sister to marry her. So he kind of, I don't know the right word, not seduced him, but he tempted him by bribed him. Come and learn Torah, I'll give you my pretty sister. And the Gemara says that his sister was a very, very gorgeous woman. And the story says that he ended up being a very big Tana. He was a very successful sage. So what we see from that, the Nisayon that Rish Lakish had, one might say Hashem already put him in the situation that he's going to become a robber and a thief and the head of the mob. But we learn from that if a person really, really wants, doesn't matter how hard the nisayon, the test is, he can still do it. It's just a matter of how you look at the situation. So, really we see that we do have bchira chofshit, we do have free choice, but at the same time, we also get punished for things that we do and we don't do it right. So this is a very big question. Because if I do have a free choice, it's not fair. Let's put it on straight on the table. It's not fair. Hey, you're putting me in a test and then you're punishing me. What kind of a system is that? I don't like that. And a lot of people don't like it. And a lot of people say, you know what, I don't want to be part of this whole thing. Either give me something to do or don't give it. Don't trick me. Don't, so to say, manipulate the situation and punish me. So we want to learn how is that going to do to me. So we have to see what the Torah comes to teach me. Because if the Torah is presenting this situation with Paro, it's not about Paro, it's about me. Because we know that each and every one of us has the Paro that is in me. A Yetzer Hara. I have a Yetzer Hara in me. And this is called Paro. And I have to kill Paro. I have to go out of my limitation, out of my Mitzrayim. First I have to kill Paro. And I have to fight with my limit. So I want to see how's that going to do with me. So why is the Torah going into length of telling me that there were 10 plagues and that Hashem hardened his heart and at the end he was punished? So the Midrash explains that first of all, in the first 5 plagues, Paro had an option to go out. It was the second set of plagues that's already when Hashem already hardened his heart. If you read in the actual parasha, you see that it says that in the first plagues, I'm going to give Paro the option. Paro had the option of saying, okay, you can go. But after 5 options, after 5 times that Paro had the ability of releasing them and he didn't, then Hashem says, okay, now I'm not going to let him. Now I'm going to harden his heart. So we see that already he had a chance to do tshuva. And where do you really, really see that he had a chance? Because he already tortured them for 86 years. So when Moshe Rabbeinu came, he could have said, okay, I fulfilled my part. I tortured them. They were enslaved and they were in exile. Now it's time, you can go. So really, he had the option of releasing, but he didn't. And that's why he got punished. Because first of all, he could have done tshuva already. The thing is that he didn't. He enjoyed it. Now, really why he got punished is not because he was arguing with Moshe, so to say. It's because, yes, he had a decree from Hashem that the Jews have to be in exile and they have to be tortured. But he added much more on it. He did much more than what he was supposed to. He threw the kids into the river. And he added to them that they have to go and get their own straw. And he added a lot of things that was not in the deal. If there was to be, so to say, a deal, the Kadosh Baruch Hu says, listen, the deal is that they have to be exiled and they have to be slaves. I did not tell you to throw them into the river. I did not tell you to after the days of work, the hours of work, to go and torture even more. I did not tell you to torture them. I told you to slay them. That's why he was found guilty, because Hashem told him, you could have keep it to the minimum, so to say. Not to go the extra mile, so to say, to even make it even worse than them. And that's the answer why the Egyptians also got punished, because the Egyptians, they did not have to torture them. The Egyptians took advantage of the situation, and they said, now they're slaves, let me torture them even more. Because the Midrash says that when they would come home, the Egyptians would tell them, you, come and cut my lawn, you, make my dishes, you, do this. And they would give them all sorts of jobs. They took advantage of that. So the Egyptians also had to be punished because they could have, so to say, either helped them or leave them alone or try to change the situation. So we see that the judgment was actually a fair judgment. But still, we want to understand, how is that going to do with me? How is it going to do with me? Like, I'm not a paro. Why I have to suffer and put in situations and tests and situations like that? So the thing is that there are situations that I kind of lost my option of doing tshuva. There are situations. I mean, I'm not saying me, but there are situations that a person gets another chance and another chance and another chance and another chance. It's the same. And at some point, Hashem says, okay, that's it. You lost all your chances. And we learned that in another story in the Gemara, that there was a certain Tana. He's a very famous Tana, and his name is Elisha ben Abuya, that at some point he became such against the Kadosh Baruch Hu that he did not even want to mention his name, that he's called as Acher, the other one. So any time you see in the Gemara the word Acher, it's talking about this Tana. There was a very, very big sage. And then he went and he didn't like the whole Chofshit thing, the free choice. He didn't like the system and he went totally against the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And there's a story that he kept in touch with one of his students, the famous Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Meir did not want to give up on him. And there's a story that one time they walked on Shabbat and Elisha was riding a horse. You're not allowed to ride the horse. And Rabbi Meir was walking next to him. And they're talking, and Rabbi Meir is asking him questions, and he's answering him questions. Then they come to a certain line, and Elisha says, listen, Rabbi Meir, you have to stop because we came to the border, the Tchum Shabbat. You can't You can't continue going. I'll continue, you have to stay. So Rabbi Meir says, come on. I mean, like, we're talking now for now an hour, and you're answering my questions. And now you're concerned that I'm not going to pass the line of Tchum Shabbat and Chas V'Shalom desecrate Shabbat. Why don't you get off your horse, do tshuva, come back. What is this, all this nonsense? Are you pretending you're not letting me desecrate Shabbat, and you're allowing? What is this? Come on! He's trying, like, Rabbi Meir tried his last chance to convince him to do tshuva. So he says, I'm very, very sorry, I can't do that. He says, what do you mean you can't do that? And he says, listen, I wanted to do at some point tshuva. And one time I heard a heavenly voice, what's called a bat kol. That just goes to show you what a level this Acher was, that he was hearing heavenly voices. But he says, I heard a heavenly voice that says, Shuvu banim so shavavim. Come back, you naughty boys, so to say. Chutz mi Acher. So he says, I can't do tshuva. My option of doing tshuva was taken from me. Therefore, I'm kind of, I'm doomed. I can't do tshuva anymore. So we learn from that unfortunately a person can be so wicked in a certain way that they're going to take away his option of doing tshuva. Which means that if I see a certain thing repeating and repeating over and over, I red lights have to start flashing, that I chas v'shalom might lose the option of doing tshuva. In that particular case, to get to a point that I'm losing my entire option of doing tshuva, you have to be completely wicked. But the point to take from that is that the Kadosh Baruch Hu is very, very patient. And he says, I'll give you another chance, and I'll give you another chance, and I'll give you another chance. So what can I learn from that? What can I take from that? Because I know that I'm presented with a lot of tests in my life. And I know that many times I don't do the right decision. If I want to be real with myself. I mean, a lot of people, they try to look for all sorts of excuses. I didn't have an option. There was too much pressure here. I didn't mean this. The point is don't look for excuses and be honest with yourself and say, did I really put my effort to fight? Am I really working my hardest? But don't to come and say, oh, you know, it's not fair. So what do I need to learn from this lesson? How can I apply something like this to my life? Because the reality is that I am presented in many situation that my free choice is tested, so to say. So the answer lies in the situation what happened to Paro. And there's a certain story that happened about 200 years ago, and that kind of gives us a very, very good answer, so to say, to this entire concept. And we mentioned before, today is the Yahrzeit, the Hilula of the Baal HaTanya, of the Alter Rebbe. So his grandson, the Tzemach Tzedek, lived about 200 years ago. And it at that time rose a new ruler in Russia. His name was Nikolai. He was known to be a very vicious man. And he was literally a vicious dictator, another Paro. And he hated the Jews. He really, really hated the Jews. So he came with a decree. And the decree was that in the age of 12, he's drafting the Jewish boys into the army. And they have to be in the army for 25 years. Now, the 25 years started at the age of 18. Meaning from 12 to 18, it's not even in the 25 years. And then from the age of 18, 25 years they have to be in the army. Which means they go out of their army when they're 43 years old. Now, this was not like the Marines, where you're sitting in beautiful vessels and you have nice uniforms and you're eating good meals. And if you're Jewish, you can go and practice your religion. This was the Russian army. So they were really, really tortured there. And one of the problems that they had is, of course, they could not practice Judaism. And they could not keep Shabbat. And they would get not kosher food. And they were in a serious situation. Now at the time, the Rebbe of the time was the Tzemach Tzedek. Now he had all these underground groups that would go to the bases and give them tefillin to put, and if it was Hanukkah, come with candles, and he constantly, there was these underground units, so to say, that came to all these bases to give the kids some Yiddishkeit, something. Anyways, and of course they were always complaining. And one time they came to the Tzemach Tzedek and told him, listen, we have a serious problem. I mean, you know our situation. And we're forced to do it. If you don't do what they tell us, they kill us. And they're forcing us to eat pork. And they're forcing us to eat unkosher food. What should we do? Should we fight? Should we stand and fight for Mesirut Nefesh, self-sacrifice and get murdered? Or should we just eat it and survive? So the Tzemach Tzedek said, listen, there's no mitzvah to die over kosher food. This is not one of the mitzvot that I have to give my life over in order not to do it. So this is the situation. This is the gzerah. This is the decree that came upon you from Shemayim. This is where Hashem wants you to be. And you have to eat it. You don't have a mitzvah to die on Kiddush Hashem because of kosher food. So eat the pork, what can I tell you? But don't lick your fingers. Don't enjoy it. You're forced to eat it. Don't eat it with the lust, with the desire, and lick your fingers because it's so tasty to you. Because that was the meaning of this dictator. I want you to sin, but I want you to enjoy the sin. So he would give them good pork, not dry and burnt. So the Tzemach said, okay, eat it. You have to eat it. That's the so to say, the place that Hashem decided for you to be stuck in, that you have to sin. But at least don't lick your fingers. Don't enjoy it. And this is where our answer lies, is that Hashem puts us in situations, and sometimes we have to sin. There's a reason why we have to sin. Hashem pushes me to a corner. He puts me in the situation. But the answer is, at least don't enjoy it. Don't enjoy what you're doing. Hold on, we're finishing in a second. You can ask all your questions. And that was the problem of Paro. You had to be the dictator. You had to be Paro. You were decided to be the mean leader to put the Jews in exile and to torture them. But don't go out of your way. Don't throw them into the river. Don't torture them. Don't kill them. Don't do whatever you're not supposed to do. That goes back to the example I gave in the beginning with Eichmann Yimach Shimo. Don't pretend you're following orders. You knew exactly what you're doing. Following orders is that you're forced to do something and you're doing it like a machine. You went out of your way to make sure that the Jews are being tortured. Same thing with Paro. You were decided, you were appointed by the master of the universe to do something. Don't go out of your way. So what do I need to take from that? That I'm also sometimes are pushed, so to say, into a situation. And really my b'chira chofshit, my decision, my free choice is kind of taken from me, so to say. So the lesson from it is, don't go out of your way to really enjoy what you're doing. Don't go out of your way and add more to it. And that's what I need to take from that, because first of all, is to understand that I do have free choice. And free choice in a very big title, it's not if I'm going to wake up in the morning and if I'm going to wear a white shirt or a blue shirt. That's not free choice. I always say a funny story that my brother-in-law, maybe some of you already met him, they did Aliyah now also and they live here in Tzfat, my wife's brother. And he's a comedian, he's a very funny guy. And a few years ago, he also became a Baal Tshuva. And one time he comes to us and he tells me, I don't understand this whole free choice thing. What, Hashem knows exactly what I'm going to do. So he says, he used to go and he stood in front of a mirror and he would tell Hashem, Hashem, do you know that I'm about to do this? Huh? Do you know I'm about to do that? So he couldn't understand the whole free choice. So he would stand in front of a mirror and be like, are you aware that I'm about to go like that? And he did it like seriously, but as a joke. So the point is that free choice is not about if I'm going to wake up in the morning and wear a white shirt or a blue shirt. Hashem doesn't care what I wear. That's not free choice. Free choice has a very external level to explain it, is that my life is like a script. I'm walking on my life on a conveyor belt. And every now and then there'll be a little speed bump, up and down, and the speed bumps will be all these little tests. I'm going to wake up in the morning, I'm going to go in the street, and a person is going to approach me, can you help me? I'm stuck. My car doesn't start. I need help. So now I'm presented with a situation. Am I going to help him and grab the mitzvah? Or am I going to say, no, I'm very, very busy, I gotta go? Doesn't matter right now if I'm busy or not. And that's a free choice, whether I'm going to do the mitzvah or not. And then 2 hours later, I'm presented with another situation. Somebody comes and starts gossiping with me about somebody else. I'm presented with another test. Am I going to listen and start feeding into it? Or I'm going to be like, no, I'm sorry, I don't want to talk about it. So this is a general idea about free choice. That constantly situations are being presented to me, and they're sitting in Shemayim, thousands and thousands of angels, placing bets on me. He's going to make it. He's not going to make it. He's going to make it. He's not going to make it. Like a horse track. They're waiting to see what's going to be. And if I make the right decision, they jump in Shemayim. He made it. He made it. And some of the angels, they lose their bets. And if Chas V'Shalom I didn't, then the other side, they're... But this is a very external way to look at the free choice. The internal way to look at free choice is that everything is from Shemayim. Everything is decided by the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Everything is predicted. My route is already ready made for me. The free choice is that I'm going to be presented with a situation and fail. I'm not talking about the successes right now. I'm going to be presented with a situation and I will fail. The free choice is if I will accept that it came from Hashem or that it was my power that did it. And this is the really internal part, the pnimiyut of what's a free choice. Because I'm going to go now and be presented with a situation and then I'm going to fail. I'm going to say Lashon Hara, I'm going to cheat, I'm going to lie, I'm going to desecrate Shabbat in one way or another, whatever it is. Now I'm presented with a situation. Do I believe that it was in my hands or that it was the decision of the Kadosh Baruch Hu? Because if I think it's in my hands, then I'm taking away, so to say, the power from the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and I'm saying, oh, this business deal didn't work out because of me. I didn't wake up early enough, or I didn't show up to the business deal. Or this relationship didn't work out because that person is not stable. So I'm basically taking, so to say, the power from the Kadosh Baruch Hu and says, no, the situation is in my hands. Or I say, no, this was the will of the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And that's really the free choice. But the point to take from that is that we're constantly, so to say, pushed to a situation of free choice. And I might say, wait a minute, I didn't want that, it's not my fault. It's not to do with your fault or not. The Kadosh Baruch Hu knows exactly what we're going to do. But he doesn't know how we're going to do it. And that's where it all lies down. Of the free choice is not what I'm going to do, is how I'm going to do it. How much I'm going to minimize the damage. How much am I going to go out of my way that the decision that, so to say, is against me is going to be as less as possible. Exactly what Paro could have done. Paro could have kept it to the minimum. Oh, they have to be in exile? Here's the Redeemer. Go. You were 86 years in exile. You're Yotzi. You had enough. That's technically what Paro could have done. Paro could have said, okay, game over, 86 years in exile. That's a pretty long time. Go. So, and it was already presented 5 situations with letting them go. And he didn't, because he didn't want to lose his workforce. He didn't want to lose his, so to say, his power. Same with us. The point is that Hashem knows exactly what we're going to do, because really we don't have free choice. But the only thing that Hashem doesn't know is how we're going to do it. Same with the positive thing, same with the mitzvah. Hashem knows I'm going to do a certain mitzvah, but I can add on the mitzvah. I can add to make the mitzvah even more beautiful. Lehader at the mitzvah, to make it more special, to go totally out of my way. I can have a Shabbos table and have one guest, and I can have 20 guests. And anything in the mitzvah even, I can go out of my way and do the mitzvah even greater and much, much better. So the point to take from that is that Hashem knows exactly what I'm going to do. The only thing he doesn't, and that's what he leaves in my hands, is how I'm going to do it. And that's what I have to take into my decision. How I'm going to conduct my life is to know that Hashem knows everything, but every situation that I get, especially the negative ones, is how am I going to deal with it and not to take it to the next level, so to say. Or not to lick my fingers, not to enjoy the situation. It's okay, it was decree, I have to do this. Not to enjoy that. That's what I want to take from that, is to know that everything that I do, my free choice is how to do it and not what to do. Because I can go now, you know, I always give one example, is that when I go now anywhere and I punch in my destination in the GPS, and the GPS tells me that I can take this route and it will be faster but with tolls. And I can take that route and it means I have to go on a highway. And this route without highway. The GPS gives me a few options. But the destination is the same. I choose the route right now. I can go a route with a highway, a route without a highway. Normally most GPSs in our generation, they give you a few options. It's the same thing in our life. Hashem says the destination is the same. You're going to do what I want you to do. You choose which route you take. And that's what I want to take from that, is my free choice, my real free choice is which route I'm taking, and when I'm choosing what to do is how I'm going to do that. And that's really what I want to put my emphasis in, it is how I'm doing that. Whether it's good or bad, it doesn't matter if it's a mitzvah or the opposite of a mitzvah, even a mitzvah, there's a way to do it. I can do it with like, just to be yotzei, just to, because I have to do it. Or I can add on that much, much more. And that's the name of the game. And that's what the parasha comes to teach me, that I am presented with many different nisyonot and situations, and it all boils down to how I choose to do it. Bezrat Hashem, if our choices are always going to be the right choices, then needless to say, that's what's going to be the power that makes us much, much better and elevates us. And that's the whole point of this whole free choice game, is to make sure that I constantly learn and I constantly go and become a much better individual. And sometimes the situation that I'm presented, that I'm kind of, so to say, forced to make a bad decision, is in order to lay a foundation that the next times that I have it, I can actually use that wisdom and to know how to not return to the exact same situation. That's why sometimes Hashem does put me in situations that I'm, so to say, forced to do something wrong. And so I can learn from that. Not to chas v'shalom fall back and say, I messed up. Rather to say, okay, next time I'm going to know how to do it the right way. And Hashem wants me to do tshuva. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu wants us to do tshuva. Bezrat Hashem should take from that another thing to utilize into our Avodat Hashem. And to understand that every second of my day, they are looking above, looking from above, waiting to see what's going to be my decision. Waiting to see if I'm going to react or if I'm not going to react. In next class, we're talking about Tikkun HaMidot. And that's the core concept boils down to the exact same thing. Is if I'm quick to react or if I'm not quick to react. If I think before I do, if I don't think before I do. And that's the whole point, this whole game, so to say, of this free choice. Is that I have to think for a second, wait a minute, let me think, what's this test right now? My entire life is full of tests. Bezrat Hashem, our decision should always be the right decision, Bezrat Hashem, and hopefully with the right decisions, we're going to be a vessel to get the right blessing from the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and ultimately reach the true, the complete redemption.